Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Everything's recording, so, mute button work? The mute button does indeed
work. Yeah, it works.
Yeah.
I stopped hearing you.
Yep.
Trench coat Kyle. That's what I'm gonna call this look. All right. Hello, everyone. And welcome to Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast, the premier and not even international nor national podcast of LRMonline.com.
But still the flagship. Come on.
Still flagship. Right. There's just two of us within 4 miles of each other, and me and Jammer. Hey, Jammer.
Yo.
And then Kyle, of course, on the ones and the twos.
And weird and shit.
Just said 4 miles, and Kyle on the ones and the twos.
Hi.
And we're part of the Genreverse Podcast Network. You can find it on YouTube and everywhere else you want to listen to us, and we'll talk about more about that at the end. So I'm back.
You were gone?
Yeah, I was gone a long time.
Was he?
It was hard rolling back into Marvel Multiverse Mayhem.
I don't know. You weren't missed. I'm just kidding.
No. Sorry, guys.
Shocking abuse of friendship.
I'm back. Jammer's still here.
Yo, I'm still here. I'm still here.
We got...
I don't know the lyrics of that song. Is that the
I don't even know
Treasure
what song
Planet?
You're singing.
It's from Treasure Planet, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's probably coming up because of...
Is that Creed?
Equally sized flop. Bigger flop. Strange Worlds or something? I never even heard
Strange
of it.
Strange Worlds.
Yeah, I didn't even hear about it until after it came out.
That's the problem.
I know.
So, for those who don't know we're talking about, sorry, this is an unprompted...
I almost brought this up as an official topic, so let's go into it.
Is that Strange Worlds... before we get to that, though, we are going to talk about Glass Onion, the Knives Out mystery movie. We're also going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. And we have
other trailers.
Great trailers like Mario, Guardians 3, and Indy 5, among other things. But now, just because we've unprompted, we have to open up this can of worms.
Made it a topic because it's crazy.
So Strange Worlds flopped hard at the box office. And, you know, it's... To me, it was a testament, and there are people who are like trying to find other reasons, like, oh, it's because it had a gay
relationship in it or something, right?
Did not even know that any of that. I think it's just the fact that I was looking forward to Strange Worlds because I liked the idea of it. You know, sort of the old timey adventure type movie,
Strange Worlds. See, we don't even know what it's called.
Yeah, and no, it's just terrible advertising. It's very clear, and Bob Chapek made this very clear. You know, when he was still running at that, he did not give a fuck about animation, did not care about animation. It's not for adults. Likely didn't even push the advertising. The fact that you didn't even know it existed, we can't even get the name right. I was even looking forward to it, but still didn't see it. But that was because I was busy. So there's one other thing. It's just all around bad time. Bad job, Disney. Bob Iger, go in there and fix your house. I'm sure you will, and things will be good. But yeah, I'll watch it when it comes on Disney Plus because I just haven't had a chance.
But, yeah, it was weird. Just crazy. I saw it was on the list of the box office. I even went to the movie theater and didn't see a poster for it, even though it was playing the same time as Glass Onion. Like,
really?
Like it was playing on screens.
Why did you
I didn't
have
even
a G in onion.
What?
Nick, am I just hearing?
Say
anything?
Onion.
Say onion. Nick.
Glass Onion.
Okay, I sounded like he was saying onion, and I was like, what?
Onion.
Sorry.
Maybe. Onion. Whatever. The listeners will know what the truth is. But yeah, it was playing there. I didn't even notice.
That's weird. I mean, this seems to be just a very, very open and shut case of poor advertising on Disney's part. So, and the movie itself sounds like it's okay, but not great, which is not... Yeah, that probably doesn't help. But I mean, Encanto didn't do very well last year either. Mm. It wasn't until it did okay. But it was only until when it released on Disney Plus that people like, you know, it became a big cultural phenomenon and all that. So
maybe it is indicative of a bigger problem just because Lightyear completely underperformed as well. So
yeah, that's true. I mean, think
that one
Lightyear
should have been a
is,
hit.
I liked, you know, I've liked a lot of the last few Disney movies. I didn't like Ralph Breaks the Internet that much. There are a couple that I didn't
recent,
like.
Recent, just like 5 years ago.
That wasn't 5 years ago, was it? That was like a year and a half ago, 2 years
wasn't
ago.
I was still at the movie theater when Ralph Breaks the Internet came out.
Was
so
it?
That was pre-pandemic.
Oh, list of...
That was at least 5 years Disney. Ago.
2018.
Four or five. Boom.
November,
four.
That was November 2018.
Oh my God. I'm getting so old.
You're getting so old. Listen, you can't... 4 years.
Jesus Christ. That was 5 years ago.
That
no,
was
4 years
ago.
4 years.
I was wrong by
a
year.
Okay. But I mean, that's... You were closer than I was. So, well, yeah. But
recently,
my point is...
I recently communicated.
I'm looking at the list of Disney animated movies. Where the hell are they? Okay, so Encanto, and before that was Raya and the Last Dragon. That wasn't very good.
No, we talked about that.
Before that, before that was Frozen 2. Not very good.
Oh,
Ralph Breaks
the
Internet. Just
talking Disney.
That, not very
so you're
good.
Just talking. You're
yeah.
not talking Pixar.
I'm just
even
talking Disney.
Buzz Lightyear
just
was
talking
Pixar.
Disney.
Okay, because I like the one with the kid.
I don't know what that means.
That was
What's
stupid.
The one with the
I like.
Kid?
I like the when I say the kid, I mean Tom Holland. I like the one with Tom Holland and Chris Pratt. That was Pixar.
Oh, Onward.
And,
that was Pixar.
And
yeah.
Soul or whatever. But yeah.
Also Pixar. And Turning Red.
Yeah, Pixar's been doing good. But also they have been. Anyway, side tangent. I just thought it was an interesting box office to look at because you also had a second Spielberg movie underperforming. And I have a theory about that too. And then you had Glass Onion actually coming in. Onion, maybe I
well,
do say
I
with a G coming
about
in.
Did you hear that?
Spielberg
there is
thing.
A G in there.
Yeah.
No, but that's the thing about the theory I have about Steven Spielberg is his movies that aren't genre are really boring. That's my theory. They're just boring
yeah.
subject matter
well,
a lot of times. They're very dry. I'm thinking like my mind goes to Bridge of Spies, and I'm like, ugh,
really?
That's so boring.
Bridge of Spies is the last good drama I can think of his. Like I find like Lincoln and stuff
Which
far
is, no,
more,
I'm not
more
say,
boring
I'm not
than Bridge of Spies.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's not something that I look at and go like, oh, that looks like something I want to see. It's more like that's like something I want to sit in and watch at home. It's not a theatrical experience.
Well, someone brought up my before we move on to our actual reviews, which is coming up in just a moment. Someone brought up a great theory that I liked on Twitter about why like people are like, oh no, all of our Oscar movies are flopping. Like, why don't you people see real movies and stop going to like fun movies like Glass Onion, which technically doesn't fall in their category.
Glass
but
Onion.
It, the reason is, yeah, maybe I'm saying it like Gorlami. I'm just gonna pronounce it. That's the Brad Pitt, the Glorious Bastards way.
I'm
no,
aware
but,
what the reference is.
No, but I like this guy's theory. He's like, well, maybe stop releasing every Oscar-worthy movie within 2 months of each other, and people would see them if they were spread out throughout the year instead of having to choose between like 30 movies at once.
Boring.
Yeah, they're boring too,
I've,
but spread out your boring
I've
movies.
Never, no. I've never gone to the theater in December and been like, oh God, which big drama do I want to see of a list of 10 boring movies? I've never had that problem, personally, and I don't think the majority of people do. Normal people. Not
maybe people are just
fans.
Done with that garbage at the film at
the
theaters.
I'm not saying it's garbage. I'm just saying it's not like something that you want to go to the theater and escape to.
I'm just saying today as an adult having to live on my own money, if I have $20, am I going to see Glass Onion or am I going to see anything else?
Bridge of Spies 2, Bridge Harder. What's his? I don't even know his movie. What's his movie?
The Fablemans, the one's like about himself. It's like someone else
oh.
should have waited and made his biopic.
You know,
don't make your
is-
own biopic.
I, you know, obviously I'm not as tapped into movies as I was back when I was editor-in-chief, but I'm definitely more tapped in than most people, and I've only tangentially heard about that through social media. So that is the problem. That's the big problem is advertising has been shit. And there's this idea that these days we don't know what's going to be theatrical and what's not going to be theatrical. Mm. And it's just hard to keep track of. It's just like we just assume, okay, I guess I'll catch that in streaming because who knows what's going to theaters at this point.
Well,
other
good
than the big
news.
Movies.
They've already announced the streaming date for The Fablemans, so you don't have to
oh,
even give
okay.
it a second thought now. Now that
Whew,
it flopped, it's like, oh, it's coming out in early January. It's like, good, I don't need to go.
Yeah,
anyway,
pretty much.
Speaking
but anyways,
of movies.
Hold on. This is a great transition, though, because we were talking about box office and Glass Onion. It was a resounding success.
Number three with 600 theaters.
Yeah. And according to CNBC, this is a movie that could have made over $200 million. But
I
because
still
Netflix
think.
only, hold on, because Netflix only played it, oh, you know, for a week,
And
there have
limited
been,
release,
in a
basically.
limited release, there have been, there's over $100 million of money that's just being left on the table as a result. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think they knew that all along. It's just the
Why
reason,
would they do that? Why,
because
actually, what can
they
you tell me about what is the logical reason for them saying, you know, if we actually do a normal theater release, we can make $250 million. Let's just do a week release and make $15 to $20 million
Well, it would
instead.
kill the reason they paid for it. The reason they
Would
paid
it?
for it was
No,
to have
would it?
exclusive, like you
No,
have to
wouldn't.
subscribe to
No, no, no,
Netflix
no,
to
no,
see
no,
it.
no. They paid for it so they can make money from it.
Yeah, but they
How does it
paid
make more
for
sense?
it.
How does it make more
We
sense to
don't know
make
how many
less
viewers
money?
they're expecting to get from it. Like, most
But
people don't even know it has a theatrical release and they're waiting for that. Like,
here's my question though, is like obviously we don't have the data. I mean, we don't know how much money they make upon releasing something, because literally what they only, I don't know how they track it, but it's, I guess it's like we release something and then we see how the subscribers respond, how many people add the subscription. I don't know if it's possible for them to correlate new subscribers within the release window of Glass Onion on Netflix streaming and equate that to, oh, we've made back our $450 million investment for two movies. I just don't think it's financially possible for them to make back that money, and it's more effective for them to do so in a theatrical release than it is buried with all the other content they have on Netflix streaming. I don't understand. I mean, and you, this is coming from me. Think about where I was 4 years ago, back when Ralph Breaks the Internet was hitting theaters, or before that. I was all about streaming. I was thinking, oh yeah, this is totally working. This is totally working. It's very clear as of right now, based on Disney Plus, what's happening there, based on Netflix's recent issues. Yes, they're doing better now, but like they are hitting some issues.
Go ahead and
And
say
even
it,
with HBO
Janet.
Max, that.
Just say it. Just say
What?
it. Who
I don't know what you
was
have to
right?
say.
Who was right
I
years
don't
ago?
remember.
Who
Kyle
you
would make this about
were you
who
right?
was
You're
right?
probably right. You were probably
Thank
right.
you.
Earlier this
Okay.
year, not years ago.
Years, no, years ago. I've been when Jammer and I were doing LR mornings and even back on the Los Fanboys days, I was saying streaming is not sustainable. You're not
It's
going
not.
to get the money that you think you are. Back catalogs, having, older stuff that you're not having to actively produce and spend money to produce, that is relatively sustainable if you can maintain a solid subscriber base. But the problem was is people were like, oh, I've already watched The Office 4 times. Why do I need X streaming service? And that's why you started getting the original stuff being made and it doesn't make enough money. Anyways.
In defense of past Jammer, this is there. I was definitely going on since we don't know. We don't know the data. Like we don't know how they track it and how they equate a financial profit or not at Netflix. But after we've seen other streaming services do things and have problems, it's very clear that it's hard to do. How much did Disney lose on Disney Plus in the first quarter?
They
A
lost
lot.
1.5 billion on their last financial statement.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. I mean, and they're a successful streaming service. They're an unmitigated success.
I just did it. If anyone caught it, I did a sly reference to a very successful Netflix program when I went.
By the way,
But
Wednesday is fucking
it's
awesome.
great so
I'm
far.
four episodes in. I'm loving it. It's
I'm
so
four
good.
episodes into. We should get back on topic,
We
but I
should get
also love
okay.
Wednesday. Okay,
Glass
so let's roll
Onion.
into Glass Onion, which we did both see at theaters because we're
Yes, we
good
did.
people. Yay!
What do you mean we're good people? What does that mean?
We still see, I don't know. We couldn't help ourselves but pay money for something that would be free later.
Well, yeah, there was no way that I wasn't going to be seeing
Yeah.
Glass Onion in
Well,
theaters if there was an option.
it was a last minute decision for me.
I mean, Knives Out is probably, people ask what's your favorite movie? I can never say like, oh, this is my favorite movie. I think Knives Out might be close to me being able to say it is my favorite movie of all time. So there was no way that I was going to miss a theatrical release of the sequel.
And I don't believe you saying that because, oh wow, Glass Onion's playing through Sunday at a location nearby here. Sorry,
you still have a chance. You still have a chance to see it, folks. If you you're listening to this on, well, before the Sunday, before the 4th of
December.
That's more
than a week long, at least.
You can see it. Well, they probably want to get the second weekend.
Yeah, but originally it was just this. And only one theater, only one Alamo Drafthouse in the entire state has it. Only one theater in the entire state has it.
But. So Glass Onion was released, and it has a 93%.
That's why I was looking up. I was trying to make you stall so I could look that up.
And audience score of 93%. So literally the audience and the critics are 100% in sync. So here must be is a synopsis. Benoit Blanc returns to peel back the layers in a new Rian Johnson whodunit. This fresh adventure finds the intrepid detective at a lavish private estate on a Greek island. But how and why he comes to be there is the only is only the first of many puzzles. Blanc soon meets a distinctly disparate group of friends gathering at the invitation of billionaire Miles Braun for their yearly reunion. Among those on the guest list are Miles' former business partner, Andy Brand, current Connecticut governor, Claire DeBella, cutting-edge scientist Lionel Toussaint, fashion designer and former model Birdie J, and her conscientious assistant Peg, and I have to click show more, and influencer Duke Cody, and his sidekick girlfriend Whiskey. As in all the best murder mysteries, each character harbors their own secrets, lies, and motivation. When someone turns up dead, everyone is a suspect.
Did you practice that?
No,
just because his accent is not even the typical Southern accent. That's a very.
I just got a text from Kirsten, and she said the accent. No.
She can hear you.
She can hear me.
I say yes.
You say yes.
That was a
Nick
good accent.
Says yes.
Yes. Glass Onion, a sequel to Knives Out, from a guy who says it's his favorite movie, but he hasn't even seen the closest film by the same director.
That's unrelated. Unrelated. Other than the same director. But my point is that Knives Out is a different type of movie.
So is A Brothers Bloom. You've just never even given it a chance.
I'll get to it eventually. I never said I wasn't. I just said I haven't gotten to it yet.
So, spoiler-free thoughts on Glass Onion. See, now I'm pronouncing it with the G.
You were always pronouncing it.
I know.
With a G.
I can't help it.
So, Glass Onion, does this movie live up to the legacy of what I consider to be one of my favorite films? Yes, it does. It very much does. Admittedly, I do miss the fall aesthetic. The clothing isn't as textured and beautiful to look at as it is in the previous movie. It doesn't have that vibe, but regardless of that stupid, very subjective quibble that I have, the movie itself is just applaud-worthy. It manages to capture the same feel of a mystery as the first movie in the types of twists and turns that it has without making it a copy of the types of twists and turns that we got. Because I remember I was, you know, rewatching Knives Out as I do every 5 minutes, and thinking to myself,
watch.
How do they live up to this? Because the first one had such an interesting twist on it, where it's like you find out what happened 40 minutes or 30 minutes into the movie. I'm like, what the hell is the rest of the movie going to be like? And I was worried going into this one that it was going to be the exact same type of format, but it's not. But at the same time, it kind of has that same sort of twist and it keeps you on your toes the entire time. And it does a great, continued amazing characterization of Benoit Blanc, not just the performance, but also in how the character is written and the personality they inject into him without taking away from how good of a detective he ultimately is. The ensemble cast, they all do amazing work. And like before, it's like you're wondering what is the mystery? Who's the guilty person here? Like, I didn't know until literally like a little bit before everything was unraveled. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't even know if we know what the mystery is until pretty deep into the movie. And it's like, oh, that's what we're solving here. Okay, interesting. And it's just, it's very unique, yet very tried and true to the whodunit genre. So another great movie. I love it. I haven't seen it again yet. I'm definitely going to at some point. And I want to be able to revisit, you know, those scenes early on and be like, oh, how are they planting this? How are they doing that? And, you know, unfortunately, I haven't been able to do that. But either way, really fun, engaging, a win.
Absolutely. I can't decide if it's better or not because they're very different.
Same here.
They
same
have
here.
To be yeah. different. Otherwise, you're watching the same thing again. Not just the cast, which is very, very different, or even the type of characters. Instead of a family, it's basically a bunch of people you would despise on the internet these days. In fact,
yeah, a bunch of influencers.
Yeah, basically, in some way or another. Disruptors. Oh my God. People tweeted that they're like, oh my God, he didn't write this movie this week. Because Edward Norton is basically Elon Musk in many ways.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh, and he just exploded. I mean, everyone knows who he is, but like with this whole Twitter debacle, it's like, yeah. this is Elon Musk. But yeah, I really loved it. Yeah, you have to get used to a different cast, obviously, and a very different style of telling a murder mystery where I don't think this is a spoiler. It just takes forever to even, like, you don't even know what the crime is for like an hour.
Yeah.
You're like sitting there, but like, okay. Oh, who's going to kill who, so engaging, or something. Though. No, it's great though, but it reverses the formula by doing that. Like you said, in a Knives Out, you know who committed the murder like 30 minutes in. You don't know all the details, but you know who died and why, or why they died. You think you know at least all the details. And this is like, this is almost me being like, this is great character work, but there is gonna be a crime in this movie eventually, right? There are dinosaurs on this tour, right? So, but in a good way, where it's just, you're like, you're so entrenched. And again, the drama between the characters, which is what makes his movie special, and the dialogue. And of course, my other favorite guy, I'm always referencing Twitter on all these shows, but the best stuff I see is on Twitter. Someone put a poster of him from both movies, the outfits he's wearing, and they're like, when the director decides you're gay between movies.
I didn't see it. I saw that post. I did not. I don't know if I noticed any difference.
I did, just because the director, I know, I mean, the main difference is, I don't, it's not a spoiler. We meet his boyfriend, husband. Or whatever.
I mean, that's the main difference, but that's like.
But I only noticed that because the director said that too. Like, he said that in between movies. He's like, "Oh yeah, I made him gay," and it's like, you didn't have to tell us that.
Whatever.
Yeah, but great movie. Do you want to go into spoilers? Just because it's hard to talk about this movie without spoilers.
We got to give our rating beforehand, and then we'll go ahead and set Kyle free for a bit.
A+. So,
yeah, I think
if it's almost as good as your favorite movie, it's gotta be an A+, right?
Yeah, I didn't say it was almost as good as. I said that it you lives up decide. To the legacy.
Oh, okay,
and maybe it will be better. As of right now, I'm gonna have to. I think I'll have to say A+ as well. Yeah,
My sister just watched this week, Death in the Nile, because I convinced her to, and. He's doing a good job with those, but I mean, it's funny that it feels like it could be an Agatha Christie. No, I'm just saying, like, this feels like it's an Agatha Christie story, but it's, you know, completely original. And
I mean,
it's
Death on the
fun
Nile,
to have that.
I thought it was good, but I feel like, because the thing is, I thought Murder on the Orient Express, the recent one with Kenneth Branagh, who directed by him, I thought it was boring. I didn't like it at all. And I thought,
yeah, same with
like
that
it.
One.
And then Knives Out was like, oh, this is what I want. Death on the Nile was still better. Pales in comparison to Knives Out or Glass Onion, unfortunately.
No, agreed. But that one, yeah. I don't know. That's obviously what they're going for. And it's very interesting that they're able to make an original prod. Like, cause obviously those movies feel original to me because I don't go and investigate who the killer is before I see a Perot. Is that his name?
Oh, Poirot.
Poirot movie.
Poirot.
Not even gonna try it again.
Hercule Poirot.
Let's go into spoilers now. We'll give Kyle a signal or something afterwards.
I'll text him.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So, spoilers. So, First of all, as we mentioned, it did take a long time for the mystery to actually unravel. Like, we didn't know who was going to die, because obviously at the beginning it says you're going to solve the mystery of my death when they got sent that box, or my murder. And I was like, oh, is he actually dead? But no, he's not. He's just a guy putting on a mystery party. I was like, okay. Then it became who invited, I almost called him Poirot, Benoit Blanc onto the island. And then it becomes who's going to try to kill him. And then, oh, who just killed Dave Bautista? And then, oh, wait,
The toxic fanboy, like, not even fanboy, the toxic Twitch streamer.
Twitch streamer. And then it becomes, oh, who killed, oh my God, I forgot her name. Gosh, who is it?
I can't remember the name of the woman
who died at the beginning. Yeah, the
character. Yeah. And then who killed her twin sister.
That's what I'm talking about.
Which you think is the woman at the beginning. But she doesn't die.
Janelle Monáe's character, I don't know, to be honest, I don't know if she's her character, her sister's name is Andy, or if the character's name in it is Andy.
Sister's name is Andy. The one that got killed, the one that's expected to be there, his name is Andy.
Okay, so Andy.
Her sister's posing
as. It becomes, who killed Andy? So it literally is like a layer of, oh, this is the mystery. Oh, wait, no, this is the mystery. Oh, wait, this is the mystery. Oh, wait, this is the mystery. And then it kind of just circles back to like, oh, so ultimately who killed both this person and that person? And it's just so clever how they do that. And I remember one thing I thought was interesting about how it was structured is it took us a while to get to the point where murder happens. And then the murder happens.
And then one had happened before.
But we didn't know
earlier in the film.
But the point is, later in the timeline. But the point is that when I was going, like, after he gets murdered, stuff happens, and then Janelle gets shot, Janelle Monáe's character gets shot, and then at the end, like, what's his name? Benoit Blanc's like, we'll put an end to this. I'm like, the mystery just started. What do you mean we'll put an end to this? And then flashback to everything that came before, and it really just, like, not just enlightened what we saw, but, like, recontextualized everything. And it was slowly but surely just blowing my mind and it, peeling back the layers, as they say, pretty consistently. So, like, Rian Johnson, you're good at mystery structure, man.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what he does with the next one. I mean, looking forward to the next one after just getting this one and not seeing it a second time yet on Netflix.
He hasn't even started writing it yet.
But, like, I love when, like,
year.
People are already like, who would you cast? And I have a great list, but we're wasting too much time. I mean, we don't want to spend too much time on Glass Onion, or at least the sequel to Glass Onion. But yeah, dude, I loved it. I was enthralled by the characters and their relationships and that, yeah, the whole Disruptors thing. And my favorite part of the reveal is just when he's calling out how stupid Edward Norton has been the entire movie, where he's like, this man used this word, which didn't make any sense to me. And then used this word, which is not even a real word.
I remember in the movie when he was using those words, I was like, that's wrong. But
I didn't even notice. I'm like, okay, it's Edward Norton. He's super smart or something.
My favorite part of the reveals, it has to do with Benoit Blanc's character. Because for the first quarter of the movie, he was being played as incredibly awkward in an endearing way. And I remember thinking to myself, huh, wow, they're really humanizing this character a lot. They're making him really, like, very awkward and being like, oh, you know, oh, I'm sorry, I'm very polite, da-da-da-da-da. You know, not that he's not polite, but he just seems so awkwardly innocent. And, like, he wanted to protect him almost because he's feel like, oh, I'm... you guys are all friends. I didn't realize I'd be the only one here, this and that. And thank you for inviting me. Like, and him going like, why are you here? And he's like, you invited me. It just seemed increasingly awkward. And I felt really bad for him, only to find.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Find out that that entire thing was a facade that he put on, and now it was just, it continues the trend from the first movie where, you know, he kind of plays himself off as a southern hokey
Idiot.
Gigali Whiz, idiot, a bumbling idiot. And even after watching the first movie and realizing, like, he knew from the very beginning that Marta was involved in the murder, in the death of the Christopher Plummer's character, like, I didn't, I was thinking, oh, this character's being characterized a little bit differently, which is fine, only to find out that, oh, no, he's actually still got his shit together, but it just plays it really well. I just thought that was really cool.
I just love, like, there's a lot to love about it. Just all the the movie star references, and then how the Jeremy Renner hot sauce one actually pays
that
off.
Was
but
so
there's like
good.
Jared Leto kombucha, like, which, and who so knows many, how much of that is real? I mean, I guess he's rich. He probably did meet all those people, but
so many good moments too. Like you brought up the kombucha thing. Where, like, it just reminds me of that moment where Dave Bautista was just like almost outed Edward Norton's character, being like, hey, you remember the time you almost hit me at on the way to, and he's like, oh, whose party was it again?
Anthony Bourdain. Oh, no, Anderson Cooper.
Anderson Cooper.
Because he's party. Like at Andy, and he's like, Anderson Cooper's party. He's
And like, I remember thinking, like, it was such an interesting distraction because I didn't even notice that he interrupted him.
Yeah.
Until the time before. Until, like, they flash back and they saw that. I'm like, oh, yeah, he did interrupt him. I just assumed it was Anderson Cooper's party. And then, like, another great moment kind of like that was when he handed Dave Bautista his glass.
I saw that, though.
I saw that,
like,
too.
I did see
that,
and I never doubted
that. I saw
that,
too. Yeah, I knew it was him. I was like, but then they really played off really well. It made me doubt what I had seen because they showed it again, and they showed him put it on the table. And I was like, oh, I guess I saw that. And there was also, I was keeping an eye on that glass for another reason, is because, and I don't know if this is a flaw, but let me know if you think here. I saw Catherine Hahn's character staring at that glass. And I was like, something's in that glass. And then it ended up being what killed him. But
pineapple,
I'm not sure if
juice.
That was just a red herring. It was pineapple juice, right?
I don't fuck with pineapple, whatever his line was. It wasn't that, because it's rated PG-13. But he's like...
No, they said fuck once in the movie.
Okay. I don't think it was pineapple, though, because they flash back to that scene. They would have had to use it twice. But, no, I also, like, just... Yeah, well, with that, I figured someone was trying to poison him at that point. He just put, like, the poison ice or whatever in his glass. Even though he placed on the table like that, I didn't know if it was intentional or not. But I definitely saw it happen the way that...
Yeah.
One of, whatever Daniel Craig's character, whose name I also dare not pronounce, brings up, where he's like, we all saw this, you know, but this is what actually happened. You know, we thought we saw that. And the other,
and I think what,
go ahead.
What I think Rian Johnson is really good, in addition to making amazing mysteries, though, is making it really cathartic that we get to screw over these people. He did that in Knives Out with the family. It's like, these people are shitty. They don't deserve anything. And in this one, this guy is terrible. And then seeing, like, them, like, sort of just knock everything down and, like, in the glass onion, and having it be like this cathartic moment. And then at the very end where they're like, I remember this happening. And he's just like, oh, come on, guys. And it's like, yeah, I remember this happening. And it's just like, yes, we want to watch this guy just burn. And it's just so satisfying in a way that I don't know we get in a lot of other mysteries.
I love that Blanc just kind of leaves at that point and lets Andy's sister just kind of, like, figure it out, or she's destroying shit. And that leads to the very obvious plant earlier in the movie, which I was waiting for the entire time. We're like, fill a building with this and it'll explode. And I was like, his building's full of that. He already said that it's full of that fuel.
So what does the glass, how does that, her knocking over everything, affect the gas? How does that work?
It doesn't, but it gets everyone. It doesn't, but eventually she starts that fire.
Got it.
Is what causes it. The other part's just her being angry, and she's like, I don't even know if she burns the stuff on purpose. That's just more of her anger.
I mean, she
fit.
Definitely burns stuff on purpose.
But like, if that's why she was doing it or not. But
got it.
And I felt that was the part that brought me out of it the most compared to the first one, is, you know, ends with a big explosion and stuff, but it's a different story. No one gets hurt by the explosion or anything. It's just, and the cast is so good. Actually, one of my favorite moments is that there is a murder mystery party, and Blanc, like, solves it, like, before he's
instantly
done explaining it. He's like, oh, I get it. You have her seated across from the...
Yeah, I think.
And Edward Norton's just so deflated, and he's like, "I had the writer of Gone Girl write that." Okay, he names the writer, but yeah.
I just love also like the very end of it. You just see the arrow hit him, and like fake blood just come out, and it's just like, oh, that's it. That was the mystery.
And just even the idea where, like, you know, he's has everything do something for him, which is why he tries to seem smart. And then even when Blanc's going over everything, he's like, wait a minute, you stole the most clever part of the thing from me, what I was telling you earlier.
Yeah.
With the lights going out and the gun being out. He's like, I told you that earlier.
I also like, so that was another moment where when Benoit Blanc did solve that instantly, I was thinking, is he so socially awkward he doesn't realize that it's probably not a good idea just to reveal the mystery before it's even started? But then, of course, he revealed that he did that on purpose and stuff.
Well, like, I would feel that he'd do that anyway. Okay. But I like though he's like, I just wanted to get that out of the way because there's a much bigger thing brewing here.
Right. Any complaints at all about the story?
I would just say, the explosion still feels a little out of place, but it works.
Why?
I don't know. And him just kind of backing off seemed out of place at first and letting her.
You mean Edward Norton backing off?
No, Blanc just kind of leaving. He's like, I can't help you anymore. And he leaves. And then she figures out a way to help herself.
I mean, I think it's empowering. I think these movies seem to be about empowering, frankly, women of color in situations.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it's like, I could see that. It's kind of like, yes, Benoit Blanc is probably the main character, but at the same time, they do their best to kind of have a secondary and protagonist, and they're usually the ones that have to, who would traditionally be the main character of these stories, and are really trying to push it through and giving them that agency, I think, is important. And I think at the end of the day, like, he's at the behest of the law, and can't.
Or he even says the line, "I'm not Batman."
I'm not Batman, right? He's not. He's like, I'm here to solve the mystery, and that's it.
Yeah. And I also, that was great. Did you recognize the actor that's in both films?
Yeah, his friend.
Yeah, his co-writer slash friend since Brick. He's been an actor since Brick.
He was another. He was also a great part of the first Knives Out.
Yeah,
the other detective guy.
And he's the stoner dude, and he, like. I was expecting him to be involved, but I love that Edward Norton's character just said it as it was true. He's like, he's not involved in any of this. He's just around. And I'm like, maybe he's on the island. He could be involved, but no, he's just getting stoned.
What I love is that for me, I was like, I hope he's not involved because I feel like it'd be too obvious if he was.
Yeah. That's why I like the truth in the movie sometimes where like a character will say something and you're like, and it's like, no, he was absolutely right. He said he's not involved. He wasn't involved in any of the murder or the stealing anything. He's just his friend who he lets smoke weed on his island or whatever. But yeah, great movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think I have any complaints. I love.
No, and my complaints weren't complaints either. They were just why it's kind of different.
Yeah,
but yeah, great movie. Recommend it to all.
Absolutely, especially if you like the first one, you're like, oh, I'm nervous this is not gonna be as good. It's gonna at least be a worthy successor if it's not as good.
Okay, you can text Kyle or whatever.
Okay,
Kyle, good
to go. So let's go ahead. We don't need him to do anything. We can move on to the next topic without him. We'll move on to the next topic anyway, and we'll here you go. He's coming back. So go ahead and introduce the next topic, Nick.
We're also going to give a much briefer review, especially since Kyle and I already reviewed it on Marvel Multiverse Mayhem, where you can hear it, which was also this week, Marvel Multiverse Mondays again, because it didn't matter what day we did it. We're going to also do a quick review of Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special, which is the real end of
it's not the
Phase
end.
4.
It's
James Gunn said
it is.
I
don't count the specials.
I don't know why you do. I was really pissed at your review. I didn't finish it because of that reason, because something else came up and I never went back to it. Mm-hmm. But I was like, how are you not counting? Perhaps definitely a top three project of Phase 4 is Werewolf by Night.
No, it's not. Werewolf by Night was fine, but it was like, if you had said there's a second episode of Werewolf by Night, I'd be like, okay, I'm not really interested.
That's why it worked. It only needs to be 50
minutes.
No, that's
not why it
worked. Introduce a lot of characters. I think there should be more of those and less 6-hour shows introducing characters.
I like
the same effect.
I thought it was boring. I think you're high to call Werewolf by Night a top three A top three.
Top three in a lousy phase, as everyone's calling it.
It's still not a top three in this phase. No way.
Loki, WandaVision, Shang-Chi, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, all
No Way Home.
Better than those.
Yeah, easy.
It's one of the only projects that didn't fall apart at any point to me. Like, Shang-Chi completely loses me in the third act.
It also never came together for me. So, sorry. I don't really care. Let's go ahead and talk about Guardians.
Guardians. I was really tepid on it. I gave it a lower grade than even Kyle. And Kyle's like the anti-Phase 4, like any project
guy.
This is better.
This was better than Werewolf by Night easily.
No, but see, here's my problem with it. Werewolf by Night set us up, and James Gunn, I feel like, set us up too, where he was like, this is super important to the next one. And it's
what
like,
are you
no,
talking
it isn't.
About? That's
James
your
Gunn
fault.
Said that. No, James Gunn said that. He's like, this is essential
in,
viewing for Volume 3.
Your,
it's going to show us
Nick.
Locations we haven't seen that are important to the next movie.
Why did
like,
you go
okay.
in expecting that out of a fucking holiday special?
Because James Gunn said it about his own project. He's like, this is essential viewing. This is Guardians 2.5. We're going to introduce important locations and characters to the next movie. And it's like, you reintroduce... Well, no, spoiler free. Let's just do spoiler free real quick. B minus. It is what it is. It is a holiday special, which is also promised in the title.
Yeah, I'll give it a B. It was fun to watch. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought it was funny. I thought it captured the holiday spirit, and I'll watch it during Christmas every year.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Like, Manny and people are like, that's going to be a yearly tradition. And I'm like, I will probably never watch that again, except for with my roommate.
Disagree. Like, hard disagree.
Because, I don't know, this isn't even a spoiler yet, so I can say it. It's too long. There are so many scenes that could be shortened in half, especially, and I love Drax and Mantis together. But, like, we didn't need to spend that long on Hollywood Boulevard. We didn't need to spend that long in the bar. We didn't need to spend that long with the Kevin Bacon conversation on the ship. It just, all that felt like filler to me to get to, like, 45 minutes when it should have been, like, a 30-minute or even 22-minute Christmas
I don't
special.
Think they were trying to get to 45 minutes. I think he was just allowing himself to be indulgent and have fun with it.
That's true. Like, the opening song, I was completely out of it already.
I thought it was cute.
And there's one thing Kyle and I mentioned was that it felt like Suicide Squad, the first one, to a point where it's like, let's cram 10 songs into 45 minutes. And like, let's cram all my favorite Christmas songs, like just 30 seconds of all of them, and just make sure there's music.
It wasn't even just 30 seconds. They played like a whole minute plus of.
And then they jumped straight
into
another song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was music overload.
But
didn't even notice. That's funny.
That's my spoiler for your review. There's only one spoiler in the entire thing. So it's
is
not
there?
Like,
what's the spoiler?
Spoiler alert. And then Kyle agreed with you, but I never thought of it that Mantis is his sister.
No, that's not
I never
a spoiler
thought of that.
That's like obvious. We knew that she was
I know, that's
daughter.
What Kyle said. I never thought, I didn't know it was his daughter. I thought it was an alien he grabbed to calm him down.
When they revealed that, I was just like, is that, I thought we knew that already. Like,
Star-Lord was somehow surprised. Star-Lord was somehow surprised. I wasn't surprised, but I was like, oh, I never thought of that. Of course she would be. But
yeah. I mean, I thought it was fun. I had a good time watching it. It did what it promised to do outside of James Gunn making promises. But like when you hear Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special, I like, okay, I'm expecting goofiness. I'm expecting ridiculousness. I'm expecting some holiday vibes. I got all of that. I had a good time. I wasn't going in with expectations of like, oh, this is essential viewing. I have to make sure I have my notebook out so I could see how this connects to the greater universe. Like, I wasn't going in expecting that at all, or even any big reveals. I thought it was what it set out to be, which is great. Just fun, entertaining, engaging.
Yeah, it was fun. I don't regret watching it. I don't regret watching anything Marvel, even in Phase 4. But I'll eat my Marvel and be happy and smile like it's candy. But
okay, I'm surprised you didn't like it more.
I don't know. It's just the way it was set up, I think. Is like he kept saying it was mostly his comments.
Again, I was like, you need to stop taking like listening to his comments and setting expectations based on that.
It's true.
Because that's just a recipe for disappointment.
Well, if he didn't say that, it's because he was wrong.
And how would you have felt if he didn't say that?
Much better about it, especially if there was no Werewolf by Night, which again seemed to move the MCU forward by introducing new characters.
How?
What did it move forward?
It moved
nothing forward. It
introduced
characters that could be used in like across different platforms.
Probably never going to see them again. If anything, maybe Blade. Maybe.
Or like Moon Knight or something, considering his first comic was a Moon Knight appearance or vice versa. I can't remember. No, his first appearance was a Moon Knight comic.
Who's his?
Werewolf by Night.
Is that the character's name, Werewolf by Night?
I mean, that's like what the comics... I mean, yeah, that's like, you know, Werewolf by Night, just like it's like the Invincible Iron Man or like Ronan the Accuser.
But what's
or like,
the character's name?
I don't remember at all. Okay, I remember Todd's name.
Gotcha. So you're talking about Gael Garcia Bernal?
Yeah, right? Who was awesome in it.
He was okay. He was fine. There wasn't... It was good. It was fine. But I don't understand where this love is coming from for the thing. It was cool stylistically, but outside of that novelty, I didn't see that much to care about.
Yeah, okay. You're wrong.
I think Guardians of the Galaxy did a better job of like getting me emotionally invested. Yeah, it was silly, but I was still like more engaged with the conversations and what was happening, and I wanted to see how it turned out.
And
whereas
that was
the
my
one, I'm just like the other one, I'm just like, okay, there's a fight. Okay, I guess we're just watching them scramble. Okay, they're just fighting each other now. Okay, I guess he's friends with the monster. All right, I didn't engage on an emotional level.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, but I feel like James Gunn is still relying on the Yondu relationship, even after he's dead, to like tell an emotional story. Like that's the most emotional part where he's like, I just feel like it's a tired thing for him at this point. I know. Why? He loves Rooker, but
why is it a tired thing? I don't think it's tired.
I don't know. He could. There's so other many other emotional moments. He didn't. I don't think he should have included Yondu at all. But
it's just a holiday special, man. It's just a holiday.
So you're saying because it's a holiday special, I just shouldn't critique it because it's, you know, holiday specials aren't that good. So
well, it's all about expectations. What expectations are being set based on the trailer? Like I said, I didn't go in there thinking, oh, I'm ready to like fucking get my mind blown here. I came in with certain expectations and it met those expectations. And speaking of Yondu, I didn't love it. I thought it was interesting that he went with like a Ralph Bakshi aesthetic for like the animation at the beginning and end. That was weird.
It was indeed rotoscoped. He confirmed it. They filmed him, Rooker, Kraglin, and frickin' the kid playing young Pete filmed them in costume, everything, and hand traced each frame.
It's funny because to me it looks CG. It didn't look rotoscoped. And it looks like it was faking rotoscope.
And that was something I found interesting. Just not knowing it was going to be anime at the beginning. The first shot was the ship flying in animation. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Did he have no budget for this? I'm like, oh, it's animation.
Yeah, it was weird. It was definitely jarring at the beginning.
But yeah, B minus.
I give it a B. It's funny how like our ratings are pretty close together, yet what we're saying is so... I think you need to rate it lower, Nick.
Well, it's like on the Black Adam where... Jonesy and Danny gave it the exact same review but had like this exact same letter grade but had very different opinions about it, and they still ended up at like the same C- or whatever they picked for it.
That's funny. So you're sticking with the B-? You think it's... What about C+?
Nah, I don't need to go lower than B-. It's still the Guardians. Okay. It's still, especially Mantis and Drax, is something that Mantis, I felt, she was just introduced in Volume 2, but she's been horribly underused. And it was, nice to see her. I'm like, oh, yeah, she has powers, even after Infinity War. I forgot about that. Like,
I like seeing them, her angry. She's, like, angry throughout the entire thing. I like seeing that side of her. I thought it was funny. And her just getting angry at Adam. What the fuck is wrong with me? Kevin Bacon. And just, like...
They hate actors.
Oh, he's an actor! Oh. It was like, pretend to be Kevin Bacon, like, you don't suck, except for you don't suck. I was just like, oh, this is good. This is golden. I love it.
All right, there you have it. Our reviews for the week, unless you want to add anything else on top of that.
Nope, I'm good.
All right, let's move into movie news before wrapping up with a hella, like, trailers for.
Did you just like have a stroke? I wasn't sure what that was. First.
That was me saying hella.
Hella.
But.
Is that finally expanding outside of California?
And that's why I said it. Scott used to live in California. And it was another Northern California thing that everyone at Chapman made fun of Northern Californians for saying.
I mean, I grew up in Northern California and used to say it all the time, so I can confirm.
Exactly. But now we can talk about going from Disney. We can talk about Warner Brothers woes in two different categories.
WBW.
Ooh, I like that.
Branding.
So, first of all, this week we got news that Legendary, as we expected, Legendary Entertainment, we've actually already heard that they were shopping around to a new studio.
Well, we heard it wasn't confirmed that they would be leaving, but they were clearly just exploring their options.
In fact, back in the day when we covered that article, we were like, even I think it was me who said that maybe they're just trying to drum up their budget, like pay more for us, Warner Brothers, otherwise. But obviously,
which is always a possibility. Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, it seems to have come down. We also assumed it came down to, or at least the article draws the same conclusion, that they were unhappy with their slate, their Legendary slate, because their movies are always giant, you know, spectacles. So that would have been two of their films in 2021, Godzilla versus Kong and Dune getting put on HBO Max the same time they're in theaters. And I think that's why they lost Nolan too. I believe Oppenheimer is Universal.
Definitely why they lost Nolan.
And Zack Snyder is even over at Netflix now with some kind of first look deal. So,
well, that's a whole separate situation.
Well, but his was the same thing. Well, yeah, you're right. His was you butchered my movie.
Yeah, his was.
No, then you did re-release it, but yeah. So Legendary Entertainment, and they say the company behind Dune and Godzilla versus Kong. But I mean, if you go back farther, they've done every Christopher Nolan movie since.
They've done so many DC movies. Yeah. I don't know if they've done all of them, but they've done a huge chunk of them. They're essentially like co-producers on the movie, so they've lost a big
and even
partner.
Other
they
Nolan
lost
stuff.
A lot of. Like, they lost a lot of potential like partners for big movies down the line. So who are they going to get to partner with them for the DC movies? Or are they going to be footing the bill the entire way? And who's going to help them dig into China? Because I know that Legendary has huge ties and connections in China, and finding ways to be financially profitable over there is going to be more difficult. Yeah, it's not great for Warner Brothers, I will say. Like we didn't see it coming.
No, and we haven't gotten to the actual story part of it, which is they're going to Sony. We never mentioned where they're going. That was because we assumed that they were leaving. We heard that story. Sony picked them up. I think Sony and Paramount need them the most.
Yep.
So I was hoping one of those two would pick it up, though. Paramount's pretty set with Skydance and Bad Robot, who are mostly at their studio, not entirely at their studio. So you got your JJ Power, and Skydance does like Mission Impossible and stuff also, which I guess also Bad Robot did.
And
anyway,
Gun.
Top Gun, basically anything with Tom Cruise. I'm confusing my favorite actors now because there's a trailer we're going to talk about later.
But yeah, Sony, this is like huge for them. This is gigantic. And I think it's also good because it's funny. It's kind of funny.
Did you say it's legendary?
It's legendary. But it mostly is because they don't have a streaming service. I think, do they own Crackle though?
They do, yes. But Crackle's like a joke. And that was like back then, even when they were showing movies back then, it was before streaming services and that. It was just like a web channel with like
Joe
web
Dirt,
shorts. And
Joe
stuff.
Dirt 2?
That was before even Joe Dirt 2. Joe Dirt 2 was after the streaming service part of it actually started. But like, no, it used to be like 5-minute shorts,
but
like Burning Love and stuff.
They don't have a good streaming. They don't have a successful streaming service, I will say. And so, like, there's not. And Sony actually did I think it was Sony. And forgive me if I'm wrong, but was it Sony that basically during the pandemic says, hey, we're just not going to release any movies during the pandemic because we want to release them theatrically or not at all? And I think that's.
And we don't want to endanger people, they said. Not that they really cared about that as much.
I mean, but the thing is, they could have had a chance, like an option to release it in another way, and they chose not to. You know, doing what HBO did, obviously they don't have a streamer on that level, but they could have put in resources to make Crackle that, or they could have, you know, sold their movies to Netflix. Yeah, they could have licensed it out to Netflix. They could have done all sorts of things, but they said no, they committed to the theater experience, which obviously is huge for Legendary, who lost out on a lot of money when HBO Max or Warner Brothers decided to unilaterally decide to release all of their movies day and date on the
and lease
service.
Some of them out. Enola Holmes is Legendary. And they basically turned that into a Netflix franchise. Like, did turn that into Netflix. Netflix got one. Now Netflix able to make the sequels.
Yeah. So it's my point is that it's very clear that Sony's commitment to theater resonates with them, because it means that they won't get screwed out of money. And because it's Sony, they also will likely got a better deal. They probably maybe don't have to pay as much up front or get a bigger cut of it in theatrical releases than they would have gotten with Warner Brothers. So I'm sure there's lots of great reasons for it, but ultimately I think it's a good thing for everyone personally. I think it'll be a good thing. It'll help spread the big budget love. Sony has kind of been playing in the minor leagues now, and I'm interested to see what happens if we spread out some of that wealth to other studios.
Do you think Legendary, obviously we know from the story that Dune is staying. It's not like they can bring Dune and the MonsterVerse with them, because those are Warner Brother properties.
Right.
But do you think that Sony would try to get Legendary involved in their Spider-Verse, whatever they want to call their Madam Web
possible.
And all that stuff?
It's possible.
In other words, sure. Do you think Sony will corrupt Legendary in any way, since they make the worst films of any studio?
I don't think so. No, I think Legendary is too big to be influenced. I think it'd be the other way around.
That's what I would hope.
Them.
That, and this is primarily, according to multiple articles and stuff, primarily
distribution.
I will say it's very interesting. Universal, it makes you even wonder if Universal even made an attempt, considering, you know, Legendary was behind like Jurassic World and even had, if I'm not mistaken, an exclusive for distribution with Universal in between periods with Warner. So
yeah, I was thinking about that. Jurassic
You're too busy
World.
Dumping money into Fast 10.
Yeah, so much money. That's a different news story, but oh my lord, that budget hasn't ballooned as much as an Avatar movie, where James Cameron's like, it has to be the third or fourth highest grossing movie of all time to make a profit.
I don't know if that's true.
That's what he said.
That's what he said. I don't know if that's
true.
No,
that's not true, but it is. That
There's no way.
Budget
Unless
is
that
insane.
Movie costs over $1 billion to make. I don't know how that's true.
It's a lot, but I almost added that as a news story, a brief aside. But I think we're done talking about Legendary. James Gunn also is like, I want to make 12 more movies in my career, and half of them will be Avatar sequels. Because the other week he was like, maybe I won't do 5 and 6 if 3 and no.
He said if 2 does not do outstanding, that they will end it
not
at
do
three.
4 and 5. Yeah, because if 3 is made as far as shot, it's not special effects.
It's not post-production.
Yeah.
But they shot
them back to back.
So just for budget, both movies, 2 and 3, have an estimated budget of $250 million. That's 500 million on production budget alone. Tack on a few extra $100 million for, ANPA, advertising, and they don't do public affairs, but advertising and stuff like that. And
as they called it,
you start producing
the films to send to theaters, which they don't have to do anymore.
Yeah, you start seeing where, you got to make quite a bit of money to make
I don't see how you have to make in the second movie.
That's what he said.
I know that's what he said. I just don't see. I don't see how that's financially a thing.
And that's the same man.
That would be like an $800 million movie and $200 to $300 advertising budget. That's impossible.
Yeah, because it's gonna. I mean, I've been seeing it more and more online. It's gonna be top 10 highest grossing movies of all time, if not top 5. People still have a hunger for it.
Let me ask you guys something. Manny and I talked about this on the Daily Cog just briefly. China has not been grabbing as many Western movies as it used to. Very notably, ignoring several Marvel films and costing studios legitimately tens to hundreds of
they're
of
like
millions.
The number two market,
right? So what do you guys think about them continuing to do that, because they really, they don't care if they're, if they don't get Avatar, they don't care if they don't get a Marvel movie. It's great if they do, but it doesn't hurt them to not get it. It hurts studios. And for, without getting too political, most people should know, if you don't, China's primary way of waging war is economic war. How else to hurt Hollywood more than just not put up their movies? Do you think that will have an effect on studios going forward?
It'll definitely have an effect on the gross of Avatar if they don't release it over there. I always thought there was a reason for each one.
Going forward, the movies. Exactly.
I have no idea.
Like cutting budgets and stuff?
I don't know about cutting budgets. I think it's more of a social thing of them. Like, I feel like people are wanting to see more and more LGBTQ representation in movies, and studios
has that been the main problem with China? I know it's the problem with studios, like a lot of Middle Eastern
and studios have been more receptive to that, but China, they also need to make them so they can cut them out for Chinese audiences or lose out on the market. I don't know. It's hard to say because they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place of doing something that is, you know, frankly, in my opinion, morally right versus money.
It costs money to do something morally right down the road. So, welcome to the conundrum.
Yep.
That's an interesting question.
No idea. Like, it could definitely. I feel like Sony will probably benefit the most.
Yeah. Or like Universal. They're not going to add that shit into movies about family. Like,
right.
There's not going to be any gay characters in Fast and the Furious. Or Transformers anytime soon.
Fair.
But yeah, it's interesting. I didn't think of the China, because I think the China thing has mostly been disagreeing with politics, right, Kyle? It's not like they haven't released a movie not just to release it.
So they limit the number of Western non-Chinese films that are allowed because it's even. From other Asian or other continents, countries, they limit the amount per year, and then they are able to just pick and choose for whatever reason. There is a lot of assumptions that the West makes about individual movies on why they don't get picked. Jammer mentioned something very specific, and that's that movies today have been made when there's things that might test, you know, the Mideast, might test China, that they're cuttable around a lot of those things. You think of the lesbian kiss in Star Wars or something like that, right? Things that you can dangle in front of Western audiences while being able to cut and get it released elsewhere. But that doesn't always mean every movie that they say no to is because of some cultural thing. It legitimately is economic war.
They just have a number. Yeah, they want to keep the money internal. They want to promote the movies that they're producing and not have it go overseas.
They still had movies making hundreds of millions of dollars while American theaters were struggling closed. So it's weird. And they've got such a big population, although they're second to India now as of the most recent world census or estimates. They've got a big enough market that they don't, their theater system, let alone their studios that don't rely on us at all, they don't need the Western movies. They don't need them. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm curious if the next Transformers will even get a Chinese release, because if it doesn't, then I don't see that doing super, super hot, because that's what made the Transformers movies money. That's what's been making Fast money. That's what makes
Fast is mostly overseas money.
Yeah, and if you see China withdraw more, like I said, as a form of economic warfare, because that will hurt, you know, when you're expecting a franchise movie to bring in hundreds of millions from China, and all of a sudden they go, we're not putting it up, that plays into what that studio can do in the future. And then that hurts the theaters, and that hurts the employees and the maintenance people, and it's all so connected. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that downer note, let's talk about some more Warner. What was the Warner Brother woe? WDW. Warner Brothers.
Is this really
whoa.
A whoa, though?
I don't know. I think it speaks to...
Explain what
I don't
it is
know.
Before you
okay.
make an opinion.
So Warner Brothers Television Studio close to striking animation deal with Amazon for DC-branded content. So this is kind of following in the footsteps. I'm wondering if part of that is that... I haven't seen a news story about it recently, but remember they were shopping around the Caped Crusader rather than releasing on
they,
their
they
own.
They were essentially... They were slashing animation content on
and they didn't even
HBO
want to release
Max.
It. They sold it. I mean, I'm assuming Amazon purchased it. We haven't heard that story if Amazon's getting in on the Warner Brothers DC business. Because, I mean, isn't HBO Max? I would still. I mean, I'm
well, you
sure.
Have to finish your sentence before I can give you a conclusion.
I'm sure Amazon has a bigger streaming service just because you get it. If you are shipping on Amazon and everyone who uses Amazon gets Prime, it doesn't mean they watch the shows.
Right.
But I would still assume that HBO Max gets more eyes because it's a prestige.
Don't we don't have data about that.
No.
So I don't know that. Other than the subscriber counts, I think you're right. Amazon, and I could check this right now just to make sure. Subscribers, Amazon Prime.
Well, here's the quote while you look that up. Okay. Oh, you said okay. So, Warner Brothers Television, according to Channing Dungey, her quote is, "With animation, we used to be about staying in-house, but now we're doing on different platforms. HBO Max is the first stop, but we are in the process of closing a deal with Amazon featuring DC-branded content and animation. I mostly find that interesting because James Gunn also said within the last 2 weeks that they are looking to make most of their animation projects DCU, as he calls it. He very intentionally said DCU when someone asked him about the DCEU. So like, you know, whereas it's I almost think that's a shame too, but that's a different story because I'll share that. Oh, Kyle has a number. Netflix.
I have numbers too.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he already got them. Okay. I didn't realize he put them all there. Go ahead. So Netflix, actually, we'll just ignore that. So Amazon Prime has about 200 million subscribers as of right now, and HBO Max about 76.8 million.
I would assume they have a higher watch rate. Just because people who have Amazon Prime don't even know they have access to videos.
You're assuming a lot. That's not fact. We don't know.
That's why I said I assume. Will. I said I assume.
There's no point in saying you assume. That's what my point is that you're just stating out there, I assume this based on no information.
You guys want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
This Discovery Plus has 24 million. So there's going to be a total in the future of 94 million, give or take, on when the two combine sometime next year. Paramount with 46 is so close to HBO Max with so much less. You know what I'm saying? Like relative to what's going on. And especially considering how beloved HBO Max has been in the public sphere, not, you know, since Zaslav. But I find these numbers crazy. Absolutely crazy. Especially Disney Plus being as new as it is relatively. Amazon, of course, benefits from the fact that people get Prime for shipping alone. So how many people are, because I've had Amazon Prime for years now. I can count on my hands the number of Prime original stuff I've watched. You know what I'm saying? So it's always interesting to include Prime numbers with subscriptions because it's not quite the same. Anyways.
That's what I was saying, Kyle. See?
Yeah, but I'm saying you're basing it off of your own anecdotal evidence.
Which is just my family.
Right.
I'm the only one who watches stuff on there.
I agree, but it's just something like, I assume. And I'm like, well, just don't assume. We don't know.
That's my data set.
Actually knowing.
Actually, I don't know anyone who watches Amazon Prime outside of people I talk with on Twitter and my LRM family. But
so you do know people who
watch Amazon Prime. Well, outside of people I know online. But
outside of your personal bubble.
So my question is you don't think it's a bad, it's, you don't think it's WBW that they're sending some
I
of
do.
Their top time top,
I do.
Okay, content, like their most valuable IP besides Harry Potter is being outsourced to Amazon, especially when it ties into the DC.
I think it's a bad thing. I don't like it because I think it's just a personal thing where I don't like how they're treating animation. It's just annoying how unrespected the animation medium is.
And I think
it's kind of like, oh, let's just throw it this way.
And
let's,
I'm surprised.
Let's slash animation budgets. Let's do this. It's annoying.
I'm surprised this news comes after the change of guard at DC. That even James, I assume James gonna some say in it, and he's like, okay, you can put that on a non Warner Brothers platform.
And we'll still get eyes on it. Probably more involved creatively, not necessarily where it gets released.
Isn't Zaslav his business partner, and he's the
boss?
Not Zaslav. The guy isn't the guy he's working with, Peter Safran or something. Isn't he the?
Yep.
He's like they're a team because Safran's the business guy and.
Yeah, Saffron was
James Gunn is the creative,
big time producer, and Gunn, of course, produces, but writer director and stuff. So yeah,
and this might not be the same for anyone. Sorry, this is a quick tangent, but I have an Amazon ad at the top of this Deadline article. I know ads are curated at people, and I work for Amazon, but I find that funny too. The top of this Deadline ad is like, "Well, you'll love working at our seasonal warehouse jobs."
Weird. I just have a porn ad. Actually I don't have an ad at the top. It's weird. How come I don't have an ad? I want an ad. I don't have ad block on. What the hell? I'm offended.
You don't get the Amazon.
I don't get I'm one of those few people who I'm like, give me the advertisements.
I've got
give me more of what I want to see.
I've got a Lincoln car and then a TikTok on the side, so whatever.
I don't have any. I think maybe Adblock is on because I see a plant where it says advertisement and it's just blank. So, oh, I do have Adblock on.
Let's see what Shame on you. You said you love the ads so much. So we consider this a WBW in the end. It's an interesting move, I think, especially after the James Gunn announcement. I feel more than anything.
I consider it a WBW.
Having DC official in-universe content anywhere other than their own streaming service. But then again, it's not like Marvel has done it. I mean, I'm sure they're the most watched shows on Disney Plus, but we're already discussing Disney's financial woes.
I have a feeling that this will be as a connected universe as where everything is canon, as Star Wars has been with all of the books, comics, and everything allegedly being canon as well, and about as connected as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Netflix stuff. I don't think it's going to stick very much to the everything is connected. I think they will have a core, but history.
Movies, then TV, and then everything else.
Well, he's already said some of the projects won't be connected, obviously, like Joker 2.
But some of them will push things forward, Harley like Quinn. Werewolf by Night did.
It will. I'm telling you, the Bloodstone's going to be an important relic coming
An
up.
Important relic or just a relic?
Important.
Okay.
It's gonna tie into all that Kang shit that
Noted.
Has bars on it and rings.
Noted. You've been quoted and marked, and we'll check back in on this in a few years and see if you're right.
We'll come back to this episode in a few years.
Mm-hmm. We'll definitely remember which episode this is.
Will we? That is. Yeah. Okay. I'm tired. Sorry. I woke up today like frazzled. Trailer time? Are we done with Warner Brother woes?
Yeah, fuck. We still have trailers. Yeah, let's do trailers.
Trailer's the best part of this one. Let's start with the least exciting trailer, in my opinion. Warner Brothers. Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, that's like the most exciting for me of the three.
Broken. What did you think of the new
trailer?
We have more dialogue. We have Luigi dialogue. I love that Luigi is the damsel in distress and Princess Peach is like, we got to get out there. There's a big multiverse, Mario. It's basically what I heard when she said there's lots of galaxies out there.
Yeah.
And I how they're working in like Smash Brothers and Mario Kart to an extent, like already
Smash
in their
Brothers.
First movie.
Where'd you see Smash Brothers?
Well, the beginning, Donkey Kong beats the shit out of Mario.
I guess that was kind of Smash Brothers-ish. I connected it more as just Donkey Kong.
Well, someone made it into like a Smash Brothers video where like they added the HP and then it was like KO.
So like I thought this trailer was awesome. It feels like there was just a whole lot of love put into this. Mm-hmm. Very clearly fans are into this who are making this movie, and they're just incorporating all the different aspects of Mario. You know, it seems like you're going with that old school mythology about him being a plumber and somehow ending up in the Mushroom Kingdom, which is super cool.
That was the biggest, I thought, part of the trailer, was confirming that just like in the original movie, there are two plumbers in New York who like
get I'm just really disappointed that we're not going to see live action Chris Pratt in live action New York setting getting sucked into a pipe and ending up in an animated world. Missed opportunity illumination.
No one wants to see a live action Chris Pratt playing Mario.
But yeah, I just think it's I thought the fact that they are weaving in so many different aspects of Mario, from like the 2D platformer stuff.
Yeah, like the part where he gets like he's like training or something, and it's like right. It looks like a classic level. And so, but instead of like the thing that circles, it's not actually fireballs. And I love seeing like the raccoon outfit and like Princess Peach conjuring fire from the fire flower.
How the fire flower or fireball is represented.
Yeah,
in the way she holds it. I like Princess Peach's character. She seems like she's going to be fun. And the Mario Kart stuff at the end I was just like, oh my God, they're just bringing in everything. They're like no holds barred. We're just doing like Rainbow Road, Mario
Donkey
Kart,
Kong already.
Racing, Donkey Kong. They're just going all in and I'm here for it. Like I didn't see anything in this trailer that I was like, oh, I wish they didn't do that. Everything I saw, I loved.
What about the accent? That's still the biggest. Chris Pratt voicing him is still the biggest concern with fans.
I haven't heard enough. But to be honest, like he did talk like an okay amount. Not a lot, but a little bit. But I wasn't put off by it, nor was I distracted by it.
Yeah, I think it's fine. And he even does the wahoo pretty well. Like you can tell it's Chris Pratt's voice, but he does the wahoo when he's doing Mario Kart.
Yeah, so I never would have wanted the really heavy accents. Oh my God. I would have
Kyle and I've talked about that.
Everyone that thinks that they do are ridiculous. The amount of like fan trailers with Mario's game voice, even Manny was like, I wanted 2 hours of, hey, Princess Lisa, go save a Luigi. Like, I was like, no, dude, no one in their right. Like you would sit in that movie and you would regret your decision.
Yep.
I don't even think it would make it out of test audiences.
But yeah. I still don't know what the accent they're going for is at this point.
It's a Brooklyn accent.
It is.
He's doing the same thing as Bob Hoskins.
But it also like...
And Charlie Day is just like, I'm Charlie Day. People love me. I don't need to put on an accent.
I think the voice fits very well though.
Oh yeah.
So that's happening. Like,
and that was a good joke.
The animation in this trailer is just gorgeous. The world is amazing looking. I literally, like I said, I have nothing negative to say about this trailer at all.
Oh, same. So, I loved it.
And yet somehow it's the least interesting part of the three trailers.
That's because we also have a Marvel trailer and a Lucasfilm trailer.
Yeah.
I guess we'll go into the Lucasfilm trailer first because that's the order I listed them, just because that's the order they came out.
Okay.
We got a bunch of trailers from Marvel yesterday because it was Brazilian Comic Con or just their show or whatever. They always release trailers.
CCXP.
From
I forget what it's called, but it's Brazilian.
But that's like the first place we got real footage from Venom and stuff, I remember, or Venom Let There Be Carnage. So they always show something there.
Mm-hmm.
They were in full force. We got our first Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny trailer. I know no one's as much into Indiana Jones as me. I've watched it 25 times.
James Burns is as much into it as you are.
Yeah, he totally is. That's how we became friends. I wrote an article about what they should do for Indiana Jones 5. And he's like, no, you're all wrong. And now we're good friends.
This funny Kirsten at the end of the trailer, she thought it said the Dural of Destiny. And she was like, what? Which I could see.
What did you think? Obviously, you weren't as excited as me, but
I was
like,
I thought it was
giddy.
A good trailer. I really liked it. I just don't have... I grew up with Indiana Jones, but I don't have the same nostalgia like you and James seem to have for it. Like, it's fun. I actually respect how much they went for more of the emotional stuff for this one, rather than just, like, you know, throwing in the same theme song and having a similar type of scenes we've seen a million times before, and have us go like, yeah, they did it again. But it just seems like it's fun. I'm excited to see what happens, but like, I'll wait a little bit more, but everything I'm seeing here, I'm liking. So I have no complaints about it, other than maybe a little bit too much reliance on CG, especially in some of the train stuff. I don't like that as much, but I like what they're going for in terms of the feels. It feels like it's a weightier movie than Crystal Skull was.
Yeah, and they the directors discussed that, and I like a man, James Mangold, is directing it this time, and co-wrote it, I believe. He's talking about...
James Mangold?
He's definitely the director. Yeah.
Is he? I thought it was Joe Carnahan.
No, it's Mangold.
James Mangold. In fact, the poster is almost identical to the Logan poster, which is just his face.
It's funny.
But I found that funny, but not that it's even the same.
I
don't
know what I was on. I think I got the names mixed up for some reason. Anyways, continue.
But Mangold has said it is more of a Logan story, not in the adultness of it or like violence, but that they're not making jokes about him being old. This is about him being old and being on his last, like, I assume he's brought back into it because the pre-credit sequence, the footage we've seen for it so far is amazing. The de-aging technology, we've only seen like 45 really seconds good. Of it in the trailer. It looks...
You said 45 seconds? 4 to 5 seconds, you mean?
Four to five. Well, there's like, okay, I didn't realize it the first time, but there's two different scenes where he's de-aged, not just the one where they pull off the thing and you're like, holy crap, they shot that in 1980.
It looks really good though.
Yeah, it looks great. I hope it holds up for more than just one shot.
Right.
Because they always say that. They say Harrison Ford says is the best he's ever seen and it creeps him out. But they say that every movie.
What excites you about this trailer more than anything?
Indiana
Jones. I was about to say, just don't say it's Indiana
and it's,
Jones.
And they did it right this time. I mean, like, it's Nazis. Mean? He should be. I mean, of course, Russians is who you would fight in the late 50s, early 60s in the last movie. But yeah, they're like, no, they're Nazis. Like, they're NASA Nazis.
I mean, I'm not going to have to side with I feel like I have to push back a little bit on that one. I don't think what's great about Indiana Jones is that he fights Nazis. I think it's everything else around it. Like, it's just fun adventure and he just happens to fight Nazis. I don't think the Nazis are essential to Indiana Jones personally.
No, but it's fun to have them back, especially in the pre-credit sequence, which looks insane even when they're not showing him. Like, that's where the standing on top of the train with the actor who plays Zola and all that stuff.
Toby Jones.
I mean that's where we saw the first set photos where Harrison Ford just had dots on his face. We were like, oh, de-aging. And then, like, they had a Nazi castle, and on set they had like Nazi train and stuff, which is obviously featured heavily in the trailer. And one of my favorite cuts in it is he punches a 1969 Nazi, and then it cuts to him punching a 1940s Nazi, like, as a next shot. So it's like, we need a hero who will punch Nazis in 2023 since Captain America is retired, and we haven't seen much of Hydra, which is their version of Nazis, even modern day. So, and just, I don't know, the humor seems there too. The action scenes are amazing in the trailer. Like, whatever the cart scene is in the sand where, like, he is yanked, just like he's trying to reach out to someone at the last minute. They're like yanked apart. The two like vehicles go different directions. And Sala's back, which I thought was a big part missing from Crystal Skull, but it made sense because that one was set in South America.
They killed him off in the fourth one, right?
Sala wasn't in the fourth one. No. They said, Brody and his dad died.
Oh, right. The dad died. All right. Yeah. Okay.
And Brody, because the real actor's dead. No. Sala turned down, not Sala, John Rhys Davies turned down the role, which is why we have hope for this movie to be bigger, because he was only going to be at the wedding at the end. And he's like, I'm not signing on to an Indiana Jones movie to be in one scene. If I'm signing on to an Indiana Jones movie, it's to go on adventures with Indiana Jones. And he has the cool, like, almost like, you know, remember the good old days speech in it where he's like, I miss the sand and the sea. And you're like, hell yeah. And also,
it resonated on an emotional level for me more because, the action, fine, whatever. It's more about what is this about? And is it going to feel like it's all in service of a specific character arc? And that's kind of what I got from this, is that it will, fingers crossed, and that the action will just service that.
And I just, even just some of the beats, I feel like something like the scene where he's using the whip at the very end, like the post title scene, and he's like, should they all pull out guns? And he's immediately ducks. Feels very Raiders of the Lost Ark in a way that even the original sequels don't necessarily feel that way. So
are you not worried that it's just a remember this film? I mean, you see Waller Bridge's character loosens up a giant ball. You have the whip with the with the guns. You have older character, and it's fine to bring back older characters in a franchise, but you start connecting some of those other dots. Are we looking at a Force Awakens type thing here? And if so, will that upset you?
All fairness, I love The Force Awakens, so there's that. But when it comes to, I agree that it's a problem. I don't like, look at this, remember this, remember this. I don't like that, which is why for me, I just think the feel, the tone of it feels like it's all in service of an arc. And as long as it actually is all in service of an arc, I'm okay with bringing it back. I just don't want it to be like, remember this, remember this, remember this.
Which, I mean, I hope it's no more than the fan service of Crystal Skull, which is actually pretty small, where like it's basically only the opening scene. You're like, oh, that's the warehouse. And there's the car chase that knocks open one, like that breaks one box and you see the arc. And otherwise, there's no mention of, like, there's not really much fan service except for having Indiana Jones be in it in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. So I'm definitely hoping this is better than that, obviously.
As are we all. That movie was boring.
Boring is not the word I'd use for it, but
it's the word I use for it. Because I didn't have a huge, like, my biggest problem was the swinging with the monkeys. That was awful. But apart from that,
it's not boring. It's stupid.
No, that was one stupid part, but the rest of it I thought was just boring.
Okay. But yeah, Indiana Jones coming into theaters the same month as Ethan Hunt. So yay, Nick.
I like how Nick always like relates everything back to Mission Impossible.
Well, those are my two favorite franchises. They bounce around now, which one I like more, depending on how excited I am about. Like, I was waiting for this trailer because when I saw it, I was like, that's what they described it as.
Do we ever have a timer in this podcast of time to Tom Cruise? This is actually quite a while. T to T. It actually took about an hour and a half, so.
Well, remember earlier I accidentally said Tom Cruise when I meant to say Harrison
Ford. Oh, there you go. So I guess it was earlier.
So Nick's super stoked on it. Jammer enjoyed it, but he doesn't have the same reverence for it. I mean, Raiders of the Lost Ark is not Jammer's favorite movie. Cool. Let's move on to the last trailer, which is also exciting. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Woo-hoo!
Speaking of James Gunn and the holiday special, it looks great. I mean, it looks like it definitely... Actually, I noticed this on the Indiana score too. Well, maybe more than this, but it has I mean, they use a song, obviously. Not like the theme or something because it's Guardians. But this... I'm going to bring it up again. Indiana Jones and Mission Impossible. I'll have like kind of a finite score where it sounds like this is like a sadder version of the theme. Cause you know, this is like where it all ends. And God damn it. I mean, I know people like at least Cam, if not Kyle, know the entire plot to, Guardians Volume 3.
Oh, do you really?
There's been a lot of, I don't recall a lot of leaks for the plot here. So.
Cam said on Switch, on Slack, Discord this week that he knows the entire plot, including the post-credit sequence. And it's like, I feel bad for you, Cam. But
I know Ant-Man. I don't know much on this one. I've been actively trying to avoid things on this one. And since I do more of the podcast and media side instead of the writing side, I've been a little bit better able to avoid.
There are five different scenes that make you think Rocket's gonna die. So I don't know if that's a complete fake out. I think he'd be the most poignant character to kill.
I think agreed. I think he's gone. And I also think Peter Quill's gone. I think they're both dead.
Think Quill's gonna die?
I think they're both dead. Yep.
Interesting. Because we get the whole We Are Groot line again. We see Rocket. It feels like one of his lines is like his last line. He's like laying on the ground or something and he has something in his head. And we're also getting his origin, which James Gunn said this movie would be about Rocket's, you know, like, you know, the pain. It's all about the pain he suffered. That's why he also has a line where he's like, I'm not running anymore. because he's always referenced it, you know, that he was experimented on and all that. And we see a little baby rocket raccoon.
We also see him hugging an otter, it looks like.
Yeah, it looks like his love interest is an otter who was also experimented on. But yeah, looks great.
You know my biggest problem with this trailer is?
What?
You want to guess based on how much you know about me? What do you think?
Okay. Not enough Mexicans in it. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow, okay then. Anyway, on that note, let's move on to what I actually feel like is the biggest problem is the naming convention. The second one was Vol.2, and this one is written out Volume 3.
I didn't even notice
bullshit.
That.
You bet your ass I noticed it.
I bet you did.
I'm really fucking pissed also about John Wick. You had John Wick Chapter 2.
Parabellum. And then
John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum, and now just John Wick Chapter 4. It's like, oh, no more subtitles. It was just a one-off subtitle.
I never watched the trailer for that online. In fact, I still haven't seen the Avatar trailer online. I've only seen it in the theater. Because I don't care. John Wick, I literally couldn't tell you what happened in the first movie versus what happened in the second movie. But
I
was in the theater with my sister for Glass Onion. And I was like, because we saw the Ant-Man trailer and a few others. And I was like, I think this is the fifth or the sixth John Wick movie. And then it's like John Wick Chapter 4. And I'm like, oh, the fourth movie.
In all fairness, we've been hearing about like a bunch of other spinoffs.
The Ballerina.
The Ballerina and Continental, like two of them. And I feel like we've been writing about them for so long that it just feels like they've come and gone, even though they haven't. I don't think, right? The Continental didn't come out, right?
No. And that's a CTV series, right? Yeah,
I mean, supposedly, like I think I was writing about that like in 2018 or 2019 or something. It's been a long time and nothing has happened.
Anything else? Anyways, to say about Guardians?
Oh,
besides the thing you like the least about it, at least is not a shot from the trailer. It's a naming device.
No, it looks good. You know, it looks like it has that perfect mix of poignancy and comedy that James Gunn is well known for. And I'm ready to be emotionally wrecked. Unlike most people, I feel like a lot of people didn't like the second one. I loved the second one compared to the first one.
I like it. I did not like it as much as the first. I think we've had this.
The first one to me, I thought everyone was like lost their minds over it. And I was like, it's okay. It felt safe to me. And the second one felt like it was able to go more bonkers than the first one was allowed to.
Oh,
and
definitely
I liked
did.
That.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. And I'm hoping that they're able to continue with this. And Peacemaker really just proved that he's able to meld that tone of like ridiculous comedy with something more serious. And yeah,
cool. Yeah, I was excited. I was stoked on both trailers. Obviously, I was like hanging out yesterday and I'm like, oh, I have to be checking Twitter every few minutes apparently, because they just released Indiana Jones and a Guardians thing, and then they didn't release another trailer. They just released an Ant-Man retrospect with new Kang dialogue. But yeah, we good.
That's it. It's all we have for. I know Transformers came out, but
show.
Whatever. It's the least interesting trailer of the four. So,
which is fun. I was already against covering it when we only had two trailers. I'm like, does anyone care? But no. Yeah, that's the show. Jammer, where can that be found?
I can be found at Jam the Writer on Twitter, and AJ Cerna Writer on TikTok, and you can find all of my books under the name AJ Cerna on Amazon and Audible. And magiabooks.com, magiabooks.com.
I'm at Geeky Nick Doll on Twitter, and I won't leave Twitter until it collapses, because if it does collapse, I'm not planning on moving to a new social media. I just feel like that'll be fine.
I'm too old to start a new one.
No, I just like, I hear about all these different ones, and they're all, people are complaining about different elements of all of them, and it's like, I'll just use Facebook more and maybe start actually using my Instagram, which is also at Geeky Nick Doll, but it's very inactive until Twitter dies.
I remember looking at Mastodon and being like, nope, this is too confusing for me. And
I don't remember what the other ones people are talking about are, but I can go join Trump's, whatever his is.
Truth Social.
Oh, God. And I also do Marvel Multiverse Mayhem in addition to Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast with Kyle. Currently, it is Marvel Multiverse Mondays until we get new Marvel content, which...
Okay, wait.
I assume Loki 2 is next.
You're gonna confuse your listeners.
Well, we used to be Marvel Multiverse Mayhem.
It's always Marvel Multiverse Mayhem. He's just saying,
but now
on
Mondays
again.
No, I get that.
Yeah, but we used to call it Marvel Multiverse Monday until Marvel screwed us of that alliteration. We had to switch alliterations. So.
They actually purpose. That's the reason why they changed it, because they really just wanted to fuck you guys.
Yep, oh, we know. We know, Disney. we know Bob, mm-hmm. whichever Bob was in charge at the time, Chapik. But yeah, with that, you can always listen to the Genreverse Podcast Network wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find them on lrmonline.com with a nice little write-up. And of course, watch us on YouTube. We got a AX squared or something. AVX squared. AVX.
AV squared.
There is no.
Write it down. Write it down.
No Avengers versus X-Men here.
That's why I say that every time accidentally.
Animeversal reviews and AVX squared.
Animeversal reviews. Kyle's video reaction. He did a nice one for. Was it Guardians? Yeah. Super Mario. Did you do both? I watched at least one yesterday.
Super Mario, the first one, but yesterday was just Guardians.
You did Guardians. That's genre shot. We also have in the mornings.
Capo genre.
Daily Cog, Cup of Genre. Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast, is what you're listening to. The Cantina, our Star Wars show, and Marvel the Multiverse Mayhem, which was already mentioned as our Marvel show. So new content every day, yay, basically. With that, hasta lasagna.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.